in a minute. Front page drama, a dramatization of the thrilling sea story, When the Yankee Clipper Ruled the Seven Seas, which is now being... Every week, more and more people join the millions of American Weekly readers who are enjoying all the other fine stories, articles, and feature fiction that have made the American Weekly the nation's reading habit. For greater reading pleasure during these winter weekends, insist on the Hearst Sunday newspaper that gives you the American Weekly. And now for our story, Black Cargo.
Half a century at sea. That's something for a man to be able to say. Over 70 I am. And it's mighty few of them years that I've spent on the beach. Yes, I've sailed a long course since I first went to sea. And the yarns I have to spin will show that adventure didn't die with the Middle Ages. I was but a lad when I first sailed as an apprentice on a clipper ship. Met an old carpenter, a Finn named Ben. He was as strong as a bull and as broad as he was long. His tale I tell, for of all the men I met that were married to the sea, this one I'll remember till my dying day. For his yarn can still be heard in the wind as it howls and wails against his dying sail. Sven was sailing on a Baltimore clipper named the Mary Patricia. They were out at sea, headed for Nigeria on the west coast of Africa. And all hands thought they were off to catch whales. But Sven soon began to wonder.
What's the lay, Captain?
What about Sven?
Arrows cast the food below. Enough to feed the Navy and not half enough pensions for a cargo of oil. What the devil kind of oil are we going to stow?
Blackfish oil.
Slave.
I said blackfish oil.
And then, one morning, lookout yelled, "Sail ho!" And soon a Portuguese half-caste climbed aboard, followed by his crewmen blacks with their filed teeth. The captain, the Portuguese, Sven, and four men went ashore.
Well, Sven, here's 40 slaves. Take your men and brand them. You'll find the iron's already hot. Slaves are in there.
40 of them, sitting back to back.
Lying together like murderers, eh, Sven?
Sure look miserable. Hey, Portuguese! Where are those four men sitting off separate?
They're bad men. They cheap. We take them from their village for raiding other village. They are sentenced to be sold.
Who sentenced them, Portuguese?
Me.
Mate, hand me that hard iron.
They're funny scared.
Come on, let's start branding the first one. Hey, you. Turn around.
Stop wailing when I cut your heart out.
Sir!
Ben, my crewman natives. Hold that slave while you brand him. Hold him!
All right, get the next one.
Stop all this screaming that's going on in here.
He bit Portuguese's leg.
Throw water over him. I ain't taking him, Portuguese. He won't last the middle passage.
I cut his heart out. Wait, Capitan. I get plenty more slaves. You have them in 2-3 days.
Sven, you and the men stay ashore tonight.
Aye.
Because they're ready for the next batch of slaves. I'm going on board.
Aye, sir.
The captain left Sven and the others on shore. Later that afternoon, a gunboat was sighted. And Sven and the Portuguese moved the slaves further inland. For if they were caught, they'd have been hanged. It was pitch dark when the Portuguese called a halt on the bank of a stream. This was far enough away should the crew of the gunboat come on shore. The Portuguese set the houses as guard. He curled himself in a sheet and went to sleep. But Sven didn't like the looks of things. And he was right. Because just before dawn, He saw a dozen of the slaves get up.
Here, somebody watch these women.
It's women, Dutton. You heard us, and someone help me.
Stop smashing those women with your clubs, Portuguese.
Hey, brother, I'll kill you.
Next time any of you raise a club to one of those slave women, I won't shoot over your head. Make up the fire.
They kill me. These women kill me. They rip me in pieces. I'd never be much good again.
How many got away?
Hold him in. We only get women.
Go back to the beach.
Man of war!
You'll be dead if we stay here another day.
Get going, you crewmen and hussars. Make four of these women carry the Portuguese. And don't any of you use those ugly cutlasses to chop those slaves down. I start working. Get going. Come on, get going. Come on.
Keep moving. How long we walk?
About 4 hours. Rain out here is like big water balls, Portuguese.
We no reach yet?
This wrong way. We go wrong way. We lost.
Stop! Halt! Tell these slave women to find the right road to the beach. Tell them if we don't reach river by nightfall, I'll shoot them.
The slaves!
They come over.
We back. You no move, friend.
Six spears in your chest. We kill you. We free now. You no make us slaves. Him half-caste Portuguese still live. Not long. Him hit me with club.
No.
Hey, Portuguese. What are they going to do?
Senor, they're killing me. They cut, the burn, they torment until we go crazy and die.
Walk. Keep walk.
And so Sven went with the slaves, who now were his captors. These savages had appeared suddenly out of the bush and had speared the crewmen as calmly as if they were slaughtering calves. They marched inland all that day, and by nightfall reached the village, just a collection of square huts of bark and palm thatch. In a sort of a square, there were fires burning and great roll of drums outside. One of the natives started dancing while he beat out some sort of message on the drums that sounded like the growling of angry beasts. The blacks dropped the Portuguese and let Sven sit beside him.
The devils, they do not deal. You go crazy with torture, that is a million times worse.
Can't say that I altogether blame him, Portuguese. You didn't exactly make no picnic for them.
What are they going to do to me?
Him half-caste Portuguese. Him devil with women. Women now finish him.
No! 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 Oh.
He's fainted, Chief.
Yeah.
How about giving him some water?
No water.
White man time. Now, white man time.
You black devil.
White man time now.
Come here, jabbing that spear in my chest and torturing me like you did the rest. Why don't you kill me and get it over?
Stop. Wait. Stop. You no torture white man. No kill you, white man. You stop Portuguese man from kill me, huh?
Yeah, I tried to stop him.
You friend, you go. I cut you from post. You go away one time. Suppose you stop this side. We kill you, huh? Suppose you come this bush again. We chop you. Better you go far away, no come back.
Thanks, Chief. Thanks for cutting my arms free. Which way do I go? How do I get back to shore?
That way. Be out of village. Go now, quick.
Can't go quick enough. Thanks.
By late morning, Sven reached the shore. And that same day, the Mary Patricia came edging up the river. A small boat put out and picked up Sven.
What's amiss, Sven? Where's the Portuguese?
Dead, Captain. Come on, get me off and away.
You can lead us to the village where the slaves are.
Not me. The natives let me go on account of I was good to them. I ain't going back, that's flat. There's 1,000 natives in that bush, sir. They don't intend to be caught by slavers.
You'd need a regiment to take that town. Listen. You know what that means? It means they know we're here. They're ready for us.
So, you're scared, huh?
Yeah, if you like. And if you'd seen what I saw behind them trees, you'd be scared, too. You better up anchor and get out of this river. I wouldn't put it past those natives to have a go at the ship.
All right. Way anchor.
Took them a day to get over the bar and out to sea. But they put in at Sierra Leone and picked up 170 slaves. Fenn had to pack them in like sardines. There wasn't enough room for them to stand up. Then they set sail for home. At Cuba, they were to discharge their cargo. But when they were 5 days from shore, the lookout sighted something.
An American brig. She's getting closer. She'll overhaul it. We'll all be hung if they find them slaves on board. Break out them slaves.
Aye, sir.
Find them. Make them fast.
Break out.
I'm going forward and unship the anchor cables. And row them outside the rails. Make them fast to the anchors again.
What are you going to do, Captain?
I'll iron them slaves fast to the cables.
Captain, sir, you don't
need
to...
Hold
your jaw. Throw aboard all irons and slave gear. See what you're saying? That's the United States cruiser. And she'll hang a lot of it if we throw our slaves aboard. Take all the boat hangers.
Odd slaves killed in a second. Snatched overboard like magic. And a couple of hours later, Navy officers came aboard and met the captain.
So you're the captain of the ship, huh?
Yes.
Filthy, rotten slaver. Where are they?
I don't know what you're talking about, mister. You'll not find a slave in this craft.
You lie. We picked up the slave gear you threw overboard. You're a low, murdering slaver. At the moment, I can only slap your face. But watch out for me. I'll be looking for you, and if I can, by heaven, I'll hang you.
Well, that's all. Except that Sven jumped ship and didn't go to sea for 5 years. But since then, he told me, every time he heard a seabird cry, he heard them slaves scream. They were jerked overside by the neck. Sven sailed with me for several voyages. Then once, while we were tacking across the Bight of Benin towards the African coast, he slipped overboard in the night and was never heard of again.
You have just heard Black Cargo, a radio adaptation of When the Yankee Clipper Ruled the Seven Seas, a feature story in next Sunday's American Weekly. The magazine with the greatest circulation in the world that comes to you with your Hearst Sunday newspaper. Front Page Dramas. The roar of the presses. Every week, these giant presses roll and keep rolling at tremendous speed. 15,000 per hour until every last one of the 7 million copies of the American Weekly are printed in full color. Ready for the greatest audience of any publication in the world.
Great fiction.
Interesting features.
Actual articles.
And color illustrations.
All these make up every issue of the nation's reading habit. The American Weekly, which comes to you each week as part of your Hearst Sunday newspaper. This week's front page drama, The Eaglet Returns, is an original radio drama based upon an article to be found in next Sunday's issue of the American Weekly under the title, The Bones of Napoleon's Son Rest Beside Him. The Napoleon the Conqueror, Napoleon the Great, Napoleon the Ruler, master of nations held in awe by millions. Yet by 1811, he was beginning to see his downfall. By 1814, his empire fell to destruction after he had revived it for a short 100 days. It was during that time he had a new experience, an entirely different experience, and on that occasion he decreed to those of his empire.
And do hereby announce to all those present that from this day, I, Napoleon Bonaparte, proclaim and assign the title and right of King of Rome to my son, Napoleon Bonaparte II.
Napoleon wasn't to enjoy the thrill of fatherhood long. Shortly before his defeat at Leipzig, it was necessary for him to think of the protection and safety of his only son. In secrecy and caution, he waited for the chosen time. Finally, late at night, with a few trusted helpers, he met in a corridor of his quarters.
Remember, they will meet you at the crossroads just beyond the church. The man with the ascot in gray. He will ask you, which way are you headed? And you will answer, we are on the way from the inn.
Yes, sir. Can we get the boy to him?
Yes, but make no mistake. Do not let him know you have the boy with you until he has identified himself. You know the word. I'm depending on you to deliver him safely. Tell the driver I will meet him as soon as it is possible.
Then we will leave and come back here.
No, not until you are sure you are not being followed or watched. I will not rest until my boy is safe in Vienna with his mother.
Very well, sir. We will do our best. You will get to the others with no trouble.
Be careful of him. He is so small. Not yet 3 years old. He must grow to manhood. This country will need him in years to come.
Very well, sir. The carriage is waiting. We are ready to start right away.
It is right after this next turning. A small church set back in an elm grove.
Yes, I saw it on our last march. Is the boy all right? He is still sleeping?
He is asleep. Little does he know what is going on. There it is on the left.
Slow down, driver. Do not stop until I ask him the question. If anything is suspicious, I'll knock. You drive on as fast as possible. All right, there he is, standing in the road.
Yes, he is on a gray ascot. That part is all right. Now, slow. Slow. That is it. Very well, you can stop, driver.
Hello there. Which way are you headed?
We are on the way from the inn. Tell me, who are you looking for?
I am looking for Napoleon II, successor to the reign of Napoleon Bonaparte, as decreed by the emperor at the birth of his son.
That is it. That is the message. Here, here is the child. Handle him with care. The emperor will get in touch with you as soon as it is possible.
Very well. Tell the emperor we shall watch over his son until he can once more be by his side.
Desperate, worried, beaten, Napoleon attempted to see his son. The one thing that meant life itself to him, even during the government of 100 days that had its culmination at Waterloo. Even during the times of greatest military stress, he never failed to plead with his enemies to grant him but one request.
But, Your Excellency, we have done our best. We have made requests of all of them. They will not listen.
Then I will go. I will get through their line somehow. I must see him.
But it is useless, Your Excellency. There would not be a chance.
Huh?
They know what you wish. And for that reason, they have taken every precaution to prevent just such a happening.
That makes no difference, I tell you. I must see him. Nothing can prevent that.
Everything can prevent it, as we have told you.
Have you contacted the Austrian emperor? Every time you have requested. And every time his answer is always the same. You will not even acknowledge your son as a Bonaparte.
All right.
I shall see him. Shall be by my side forever and ever, sometime.
But that sometime wasn't to come for Napoleon Bonaparte during his lifetime. For in Vienna, his son was systematically schooled to know nothing of his father. He was made a duke, the Duke of Reichstadt, considered a member of the Imperial Austrian family. Later on, the Emperor of Austria made it his solemn pledge to eradicate all memory from the boy's mind of his great father and of France. In his teens, Napoleon Bonaparte, now called Duke of Reichstadt, would question the emperor at length to learn of his father.
But what was he like, sir? Is it true he was the greatest?